SF Signal, Episode 76, Worldcon Interview with Brent Weeks. So, sitting here again with Mr. Brent Weeks and his lovely wife. Thank you. You can speak if you want to,
okay.
Or you can just sit there quietly if you prefer. It's totally up to you. On Twitter, not too long ago, You were celebrating.
I was celebrating. I had a really good day, and I did 12 push-ups. the other thing.
Yes.
I have recently finished the first draft of The Blinding Knife, which will be a book two in the Lightbringer trilogy, the first book of which is just coming out in paperback in a couple weeks here, and was called The Black Prism.
Okay. And so who gets carried over? Can you tell us?
Everyone who was alive at the end of the last book. As I generally like to pick up stories very quickly after the end of the previous story.
Okay.
So because my storylines tend to be pretty intricately involved. So
yeah.
If I move the book forward, 6 months, I not only have to sort of re-clue you in to everything that happened in the previous book, but I also then have to backfill what's happened in the 6 months since you left me. And it just turns into an incredible amount of exposition. And so if I instead pick up, a couple days, a week after the big battle at the end, it gives me less exposition to do and lets the story move forward a little more quickly.
And less stress on you.
Less stress on me. I think a big part of being a fantasy novelist is figuring out how to get big chunks of information from my brain to your brain without slowing down the story to a crawl. And so there are a lot of tricks to doing this, but there's only so many. So the less extraneous information that you have to pull around, the better.
I understand. Now, we're sitting at Worldcon. You've had bus troubles. I've had bus troubles. Everybody's had bus troubles.
Yeah.
There was an angry mob out there when I got here.
An angry mob?
They were yelling at the driver. Like, where the hell have you been? We've been sitting out here for 40 minutes. It's supposed to be every 15 to 20.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's...
I had two times where the hotel we're staying at is 1 mile away. So it's sort of close enough you think you should walk, but it's Reno and it's really, really hot.
92.
And because you made fun of me the other day, I wore jeans today because I was like, I should look like a professional because I'm getting mocked because I'm wearing shorts. So walking a mile in the Reno sun was... I didn't want to, but the bus has taken 45 minutes both times.
Yes, but a taxi is just $6.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't it feel a little like you're putting on airs to drive a taxi? Like, the hoi polloi are on the bus, but me, I'm a panelist. I'm going to take a taxi. Where's my limo? Isn't that in my rider? It just feels silly,
So I get in the elevator yesterday morning, and there's someone in there that I recognize who I've talked to several times. Mm-hmm. And I think the last time I talked to him, I pissed him off.
Okay.
Because he gave me huge attitude. And so I've been very, very nice to him ever since. It's like I don't say. And so I just said, hello. Are you enjoying the convention so far? And he's like, yes, but I'm late for my panel. And I said, well, the bus should be downstairs. He's like, no, I have a car waiting.
What?
I'm like, okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
I
apparently
have
some people
waiting.
Do. Like, they're a panelist.
Okay. And he had attitude with it, too, which is nice.
Yeah. So you finished the novel, which is fantastic. So now that goes off to your editor. Not yet?
No, I don't trust her that much.
You don't do the first draft?
You're not listening to this, are you, Devi Pillay, who likes to get unsolicited manuscripts?
Yeah, right.
it is one of these things where I could turn it in right now and she would have a lot of comments, but it's the first draft is finished, but it's a first draft. It has serious problems. There are some characters that aren't working right now, that readers wouldn't like as much as I want them to like, effects that aren't quite working. And mostly it's a few character things. And I have one like glaring chronological problem that I have to, that I have to fix. I can fix it. It's just, it's like, I have to figure out the right way to do it because there's trade-offs right now of the two different ways I see of fixing it. And so I just have some decisions to make. So part of publishing is marketing.
Mm-hmm. Big part.
And I mean that not just marketing, externally and trying to convince everybody how great the book is, but trying to get people who are in the business of selling the book, those people excited too. So in some ways, even though it's my editor's job to edit my books and help them be great, I want to show them to her and have her immediately be excited about them too.
Right, sure.
So I've got this like separation anxiety thing with my manuscripts until I send them out there, and then you know, people are going to stomp on my baby anyway. So.
Is this new, or have you always kind of approached your drafts this way?
I've always kind of approached my drafts that way. Yeah, I like to have times to have time to fix all the stuff that I know is wrong, and then I am a pretty flexible writer. Like I'll listen to people. Like I can do a bunch of drafts, and then somebody says this character totally sucks and doesn't work, and if I agree with them, I'll go back and I'll just change it, and everything will change. And if tons of stuff has to change, I'm okay with that because I just figure that that's part of the hard work of this job is being willing to go and like, dang, I slaved on those 12 chapters for forever, and now I can't use them at all. And so yeah, I've taken 30,000 word chunks out, mm-hmm. and just been like, eh. You know, and you put it in a file somewhere thinking maybe I'll use this in the future, and it makes you feel better, and you never will.
Right.
But I'm just willing to do that. So yeah, I've always been like, let me put my best foot forward with you. And then still work in the future. So
what do you think about last time we spoke, Borders was just having some troubles. Now they're kind of gone.
It's,
how do you think that's going to impact?
Let's see. How honest should I be? It's pretty tough, yeah. quite honestly. But Borders had been really good to me. It's really popular, kind of, in fantasy circles and in all book lover circles to love the independents. And I do love the independents. I mean, I've been to lots of those stores and I love the booksellers who know a ton of. Who know their audience, who know their books, and who know the authors. But boy, having 600 bookstores
right.
Order your books rather than two bookstores order your books is like really important. And Borders was good to me. They my books were selling really well. Like the Night Angel books when I first published them, they were selling really well. And Borders actually like paid attention to that pretty quickly, and reordered. And they reordered and they reordered. And then finally, 6 months after publication, they put up a big display. I mean, they worked with my publisher to do that, but they were willing to order a ton of books and put up a big display. And that's when I hit the New York Times bestseller list, which is pretty rare to hit that late, but it would not have happened without Borders ordering a lot of books to those stores. And if it had just been Barnes & Noble doing Barnes & Noble thing, they have picked up their ordering too. But Borders was really supportive, and they were going to be really supportive. They had a huge order in for my the paperback of The Black Prism. So they went under, and all those orders go
right.
away.
Yeah.
So pretty much the Black Prism already hit the New York Times bestseller list. So I it's still a New York Times bestseller, but it's pretty much made it impossible for the paperback to also hit the New York Times bestseller list. So, you know, 600 stores that ordered more than the 800 Barnes & Noble stores.
Right.
Bye. So it hurts, and you hope that Barnes & Noble picks up that slack, and you hope that people still are buying books and still love books. It's a tiny bit scary. I mean, it probably sets me back in my career by a year or half a year or something. I mean, it slows down the growth of my readership.
And not just yours. I mean,
not just mine. Everybody's. Not just mine.
There's a lot of places where Borders was the only store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like where Walmart is the only store, mm-hmm. you know, where you can go and get stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You had a Borders or you had a Barnes & Noble. You know, in Denver, I've watched bookstores open
mm-hmm.
and close.
Mm-hmm.
And open and close. It's almost as bad as a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they don't make enough money in the first 6 months, they're gone.
Right, right. Right. I mean, Denver, you've got the tattered cover.
We do have the tattered cover.
So, you've got a. I love those small indies that are big enough to have a few branches. You know, so they're big enough to kind of ride out some economic downturns. I mean, at least I hope so. But still small enough to really make personal connections and stuff. So, I think because Borders was so supportive of me, it hurts me a little bit disproportionately to somebody who's just getting, you know, each store is ordering X copies, whether it's a Barnes & Noble or Borders or,
well,
or a Powell's.
I had even heard some horror stories from a couple of publishers who had sent large quantities of books that were launching to Borders. And then when Borders closed, they couldn't get those books back. And a huge inventory was just kind of stuck. And here they're trying to launch books, and they don't have inventory.
This is what happens when a huge chain just goes under. And and I hope we've seen the last of it. But, the e-reader thing is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not against e-readers, unlike it seems like a lot of people are. I mean, I love reading books on a Kindle. I read these fat fantasy novels, and 1,000 pages, and you take it on the airplane. You can't fit it in the seat front pocket, or you can, and then your knees are like killing you, or whatever. It's like, oh, I can carry 50 of those on my Kindle, and I can read whichever one I want. That's pretty sweet.
It is.
It doesn't completely replace paperback books, but it's something that the market still has to deal with, and just the prevalence of people walking into the bookstore, scanning the barcode with their phone app and being like, oh, I can get it for $10 cheaper on Amazon, and they order it. I mean, basically, you were doing the bookstore was doing all the marketing, had all the overhead for some other store, and you can't run a business that way.
No, it's like going into Best Buy and mm-hmm. using that employee to mm-hmm. help you figure out which router you need
mm-hmm.
for your house, for your Wi-Fi. You know, it's like you don't understand. You go in, they explain it all to you, mm-hmm. you say thank you, you leave, and then you order it on Amazon.
Right, right. It's rough, and I have no idea how you get around it. And clearly the people at Borders didn't either. So I hope we can.
I had a instance just two, 3 weeks ago when Ghost Story came out. Jim Butcher.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I really wanted to read that.
Uh-huh.
And I had it on my phone to tell me when it was coming out.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was the Amazon date. And Amazon had a date different than the local bookstores.
Oh, really?
And so none of the bookstores had it in stock. But Amazon was shipping it and selling it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I could either order it from Amazon and get it in a couple of days, or I could wait 2 weeks.
Right, right.
You know, and
no choice at all.
When you're a rabid fan for something and you really want to read it, you know, what are you going to do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're going to order it on Amazon. I mean, I order books on Amazon all the time. And
Your Kindle.
Yeah. For my Kindle, or just, you know, it's like, oh, am I going to drive half an hour to go to a bookstore? Well, you know, I'm so busy, I'm not going to read it today anyway. So click.
Well, what I like to say about the Kindle is it's really cool because now I can buy books immediately and not read them for 2 weeks.
Yes. The thing I love about the Kindle... and I'm sorry if we're running over ground that you've probably talked about with a lot of other people, is you get the impulse buys.
You do.
I can be like, oh, the Jim Butcher is out or whatever. I like his books. Well, I'm not going to drive a half an hour to pick that thing up. For the books that you're a fan of, but you're not a rabid fan. It's like, Cory Doctorow or whatever, whatever it is that interests you, but you're not going to get it no matter what. And you can just buy that right away. It's like, and maybe you never even end up reading it. But you know what? It's a sale. So, like, I, as a writer, I want to make my books as available as easily as possible, with you know, the minimum of fuss for as many readers as I can get. Because I need, like, I want to have the rabid fan base grow and grow and grow, but I don't mind if, you know, somebody who, oh, apparently somebody said something about him and they order my book and then they don't end up reading it. I mean, hey, you know, I'll take my 50 cents however I can get it.
Right.
So,
all right. Well,
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
So draft is done. You're going to work on another draft. Mm-hmm. You got anything else going on out there?
I do have some other things going on.
I was gonna say,
on.
Your wife is nodding her head.
Yes. I haven't announced some of these things on my webpage. I think one that I can tell you that I haven't announced, but I think it's okay to announce, is I'm going to be having a graphic novel.
Ooh.
Of the Way of Shadows.
Very cool.
And we will we'll see how that does, and if it does well, of course, then they'll continue to graphic novelize.
Here's my question to you on that.
Yeah, yeah.
This seems to be a trend.
Uh-huh.
I'm noticing. So we had, I forget the name of the company, they're gone now. Dabble Brothers or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
They did A New Spring, Robert Jordan, uh-huh. And then they did A Wheel of Time, uh-huh. The first one. You have Jim Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
And what is happening a lot with authors is they're writing some sort of prequel,
uh-huh.
that they're launching first, and then they're doing a graphic novel of their book.
Uh-huh.
So you had Butcher did it with Welcome to the Jungle, and then they did Stormfront. I just talked to a lady who is doing this with her books.
Gail Carrier is doing it with her books.
Is Gail doing it with hers? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
This is... it's another urban fantasy person, and I can't remember her name.
It
seems to be a trend
now. It's
fairly
common, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. where people are doing this.
I think the thing is... sadly, it's sad for the small guy. It's like people want to... Everything's a gamble. So you want to take as few risks as you can, talking as the graphic novel mm-hmm. company owners. And so if you've got like, oh, James Patterson, he wants to, you know, do a graphic novel. Okay, we'll try that because we know James already has a huge established presence. You'd take a Jim Butcher. You'd be like, well, let's see. You know, he's got probably better odds of having a successful graphic novel for us than most anybody. And mm-hmm. Especially if the story is particularly visual and is fast moving, then it becomes a natural choice for them. It's like, well, we know this works. We know fans love you. We think we can make we've read your book. We think we can make a great graphic novel out of it too. Let's give it a shot. So I think it's a risk minimizing kind of thing, and for the authors, it's like, well, if I can bring in people who don't read fantasy novels,
exactly.
I think part of it is
some publishers and authors are essentially trying to bring in that comic book reader,
uh-huh.
and maybe transition them into reading the novels.
Right, right.
You know, you're obviously going to get people who are rabid fans, mm-hmm. and they're going to go out and get it because they want to visually see.
Right, right.
You know, how are these characters being created? You know, mm-hmm. what are they looking like? I know Butcher was really happy with Dresden.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He loved the way that they started drawing Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some other authors have really liked the way. You know, when I looked at the Wheel of Time stuff, I'm just sitting there, and in my head I'm going, this doesn't look anything like Dale K. Sweet stuff. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah,
know, the
right,
covers,
sure,
you know,
sure.
I kind of had that stuck in my uh-huh. head a little bit. So... when is that coming out? Can you say?
It takes at least a year to okay. do, and I think we'll be doing it with Yen Press.
Okay.
And they're doing Gail Carrier's thing too, and they post the plan right now, subject to change, of course. But they develop the characters and stuff, so it gives me something to put on my webpage. You can look at it, and then they post each chapter online for free as it's done.
Mm.
So if you don't ever want to buy it, you're just interested, you can just look at it every month as the new chapter comes out.
Are you doing the scripts yourself, or are you letting them do it?
I'm not going to do the scripts myself.
Because it's a completely different kind of writing.
It is a completely different beast. And I think a big part of where I'm, the phase of my career that I'm entering right now is figuring out what are my skills and where do I need to spend my time.
Sure.
Because I know several very successful authors who spent just a crap load of time on their graphic novel. I mean, just way, way, way too much time. Whether it was because it was their passion or it was just like, oh, this is new, this is different. It's like, you know, maybe you're not the best graphic novel writer in the world, but you are the best urban fantasy writer in the world. You know, like my first novel that I wrote, it was not that good. I'm still the same guy. But you just get better with practice.
Sure.
And so assuming that I can write a graphic novel that could be a classic is just silly. I could spend 2 years or 5 years doing that and it still wouldn't be. So for me, it's like, okay, I've written the book. I made it absolutely the best I could. And when they do the graphic novel, they will have to cut things and they will have to change things. And maybe characters will look a little different certainly they'll look different than I have them pictured in my mind. And I might not love all the choices they make, but it's better for me to let them make those choices because on the whole, they will put out a better product that still has my story as its framework. And I can have, you know, another book in the tin by the time it's done. So,
well, that's very cool and very exciting.
Yeah, it's a scary balancing act. I mean, it's a little terrifying.
It can be, yeah. I'm just glad that you told me and not Sean Farrell.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I gave you a scoop.
All right. So, like I said, I didn't want to keep you guys too long. Mm-hmm. So, why don't you tell people again, website, Twitter, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, well. Where you will be this fall? I will be That prompt was from my wife. She's my other brain, the good one. I will be at Dragon Con this fall. I will also be at World Fantasy. And
so Dragon Con's
in Atlanta.
Not too
it's right. Oh, it's in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He's kind of in denial about how close things actually are. He says the mass market is in a couple weeks. No, it's next Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which they're releasing book trailer, so that's kind of an exciting
thing. Oh, yeah, sorry. I've got to get my marketing shtick together, and I'm still kind of in the book mode, so like the marketing thing is totally different. I have this book trailer that they did. It's put together by this young director, Leo Kai Angelos. If you YouTube Dragon Age trailer, if any of you are into the Dragon Age video games,
Felicia Day.
I
believe is doing that.
Yeah. This is not Felicia Day's. This is like he put together a fan trailer, and you can see this fan trailer,
okay.
and it's amazing, and you can look at his work there. So he's brilliant, and so we did this book trailer, and it was kind of a huge education for me in working with Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I mean, like he's sending me cast photos and. And I think we put together a pretty brilliant product, but it was a crazy amount of work for a 2 minute trailer.
Right.
You know, there was just, and it kind of prepared me because my experience working with Leo was like as good of an experience as you could have working with a director. Sure. Because he wanted to know everything. He wanted to be as faithful as possible. He wanted to get things just right. And of course, on the other side, like we're working with a very, very, very small budget, but he does brilliant special effects and computer things, and so juggling all these things and trying to get things onto film in a way that looks something like what they were in my head,
right.
But also going through. Just the reality, you know, like.
I just want to throw it out there.
Sorry,
no, Daniel Abrams.
Yeah.
I think did a book trailer.
Did he?
Had
okay, yeah.
And his experience was this person went out to do this trailer, and he would send him dailies.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he's sitting there and he said, I'm sitting there watching these dailies and I'm thinking, oh, my Lord, I've wasted my money.
Yeah.
You know, this is just crap. I can't believe it. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then they took all this stuff that he thought was just terrible.
Yeah.
He said, and this guy strung it together. He added special effects and music. He did this. He did transitions. Uh-huh. He did all this kind of stuff. He said, before he knew it, he had this brilliant book trailer.
Uh-huh.
And he's just sitting there going, okay, now I know.
It's amazing and terrifying. So the book trailer is it's available on Facebook, and we will eventually put it on my webpage. But for right now,
what do they have to search to find it?
If you look for The Black Prism, or it's like www.facebook.com/TheBlackPrism, or it's a fan page. It has some. It has the first teaser chapter of The Blinding Knife, or actually three chapters. They're a little short, but three great chapters that I'm pretty happy with, although I've already changed them. But I'm pretty happy with those. So those are all on the Facebook page. I'm also on Facebook. I do friend fans. Mm-hmm. And my website is brentweeks.com. My email address is brent@brentweeks.com. And just making it easy, on Twitter, I am at Brent Weeks. So
where if you follow Brent, you will certainly see some sort of conversation between you and Sam Sykes.
Sam Jabbers. My goodness, the man the man gives me crap constantly, and every once in a while I rise to the base.
It's not just the bait. I've met Sam and he says he just likes to pick fights.
Yes, he does. He does. And Sam is actually a really nice guy.
He is.
Underneath the 12-foot gruff bear exterior, he is a little frightening.
He's bigger than me.
He is bigger than you.
And that's
saying something. Yeah.
My joke. I am between 6'2 and 6'5, depending on which convenience store I'm leaving.
That's brilliant. That's a good one. That's worth recycling.
Yeah.
So
if you like that, then I totally wrote it. I didn't steal it.
Okay. Right. Sure. Absolutely.
All right, so
I get it.
I think we're done.
Okay. Perfect.
Unless you got anything else.
Just check the website for the other appearances.
Yep.
For...
So Dragon Con in a couple weeks. You're going to World Fantasy in October.
And then I'm doing Confusion in Michigan in
January
or February.
That's a lot of travel.
And you're also...
It is a lot of travel.
Have a signing...
Oh, I'm at OriCon also up in Portland, and I will be doing the multi-author signing at Powell's there.
Also a Seattle, a Portland, and a LA area single signing to promote the Black Prism mass market.
Yeah, we're having like a little tiny book tour for Black Prism. So, those are all coming right up. So, yeah, that was why I wanted to get the book the first draft done, because I knew I was entering insanity time. So.
I understand.
So all there right. It is.
There it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to the Weeks for sitting down with me. We actually took over one of the panel rooms. Brent was sitting on a panel with Brandon Sanderson and Peter V. Brett, who I didn't even know was at the convention. His addition was kind of last minute, he said. And when they were done and the room cleared out, we went ahead and closed the door and took over that space. So that gave us a nice quiet place, other than somebody's phone ringing outside. But it gave us a nice quiet place to record an interview. And an interesting thing, we tried to turn a couple of chairs and all the chairs were like locked together. You could not pull these chairs apart. It was ridiculous. Anyway. If you haven't yet checked out the book trailer that we discussed, you need to go check that out. A lot of people are talking about it. There's a lot of positive buzz. It's a very cool trailer. I suggest that you go check it out. I believe DiNardo even put it up on SF Signal. So go to sfsignal.com and search for book trailer or The Black Prism, and you should be able to find that trailer. It is a very cool trailer. Usual stuff, sfsignal.com, twitter.com/sfsignal. That's John D. He tweets a lot there. I am twitter.com/atfmb, which is all things from my brain. I'm also over on functionalnerds.com, where we have another podcast. You might like that one if you like this one, so go check that out. And my blog is atfmb.com. Let's see, anything else? If you have any thoughts, comments, suggestions, questions,
feel free to give us a call, 720-277-9082. That's the voicemail line. If you don't want to make that phone call, if it's a long-distance call, you can go to sfsignal.com, find this post for the podcast, and there's a flash widget where you can enter in your number, and Google will call you, saving you that phone call, unless you're on a cell phone, because then you get charged no matter what. But I can't control that. That's just the cell phone companies. You know, what am I going to do? They don't listen to me anymore. So I think that's it. We will be back next week with more good podcasty stuff, including another one of my Worldcon interviews. I think that's it for me. I am out of here. This is the last podcast editing thing I need to do here over the long weekend, so I am going away to do something else. I will see you guys next week. Bye.